Hey Campbell, thanks so much for being on the show, man.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Let's start off with some rapid fire questions. Why do you think it is important for the youth to be in government relations?
Yeah, I think speaking as somebody that's 24, I can probably answer this question pretty well. I think there's a misconception, probably across the industry, especially in the state of South Carolina, that it's a 40 to 50 to 60 to 70-year-old dominated industry, which it is. But I think the most important piece about that is that even though there's a lot of professionals who are a lot wiser than me and that have had a lot more experience in the field, especially in South Carolina, that leaves room for somebody like me or one of my peers to really latch on to a professional in that industry in South Carolina that's been doing the work for so long, learn the ropes, learn how to deal with the clients, learn how to deal with legislators, learn how to work the issues, and almost be able to step into the shoes of one of these older lobbyists or these older professionals who've been doing it for so many years. And perhaps be afforded the opportunity one day to maybe take over their clients or, work with their firm, get a job in their firm. And so I think it's important for people that are my age and younger or in their late 20s to be involved in it because there is job opportunity. But second of all, it's just important for people that are young and my age to be involved in the process. I think a lot of my peers don't really know what goes on in their own state legislature or on a national level. I know we're not talking about Congress, but I think from a statewide level, a lot of my peers in South Carolina don't really know the legislative process and don't really know how these important laws and regulations that get passed affect them. So I think that's why primarily the most important reason it is for young people to be involved in the process of GR.
And has anything surprised you once you got into this field?
I think the strategy has surprised me. I think there's a misconception. If you look up lobbyists on Google, you're going to find pictures of people going out to dinner and money being exchanged between hands. And there was even a picture I've seen one time of somebody with a baseball bat clubbing a baby seal. And it's just that is such a misconception. But I think the thing that has surprised me the most is that it is a very strategic profession. You have to be strategic in the conversations you have. You have to be strategic in the people that you're lobbying, whether that's the members of state legislature, county council, whatever it may be. You got to be very strategic in that. And there is a lot of strategy going on besides just what happens in a committee hearing or on the floor of the House and the Senate, that most of the work is done behind the scenes months in advance. And I think that's the piece that has surprised me. Is that being a lobbyist, you do have to sit at your computer sometimes and you have to spend hours researching issues and you've got to spend hours collecting data and you've got to spend hours putting together talking points. It is not all just getting up in front of a committee and giving testimony or shaking hands in a backroom deal. It really is a lot of strategy, a lot of research, and a lot of background work to be able to get the issues that you want done for your clients across the finish line successfully. I think that's the most surprising piece for me.
And if you had to the opportunity to change one rule in the state government process, what would that be?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I think, one rule in state government process, and you may have to edit this if it's being too long for me to think about it, just because this is something I never have actually had to think about. I think for lobbyists, I think we obviously have to be able to, report and disclose and register when we're lobbying. And that's a very important piece of the transparency in the process of being a lobbyist. And I think most states are have the same regulations. I think what I would like to see is actually some more transparency on the side of, anybody that's trying to lobby a county council or a city council, kind of on that local side, or a school district board of trustees, for example. Those folks do not currently have to register as lobbyists in South Carolina. And so I think in the same vein that the lobbyists that are lobbying the General Assembly need to register, I think one thing I'd like to see is more transparency around and more accountability around folks that are working with school boards and local government also being having to register as lobbyists in the state. I think that just I think that provides an extra layer of, like I said, accountability and transparency, as we have to do when we're lobbying the state legislature.
And a bit a sneak peek into your personality. So what would you be if you weren't a lobbyist?
I wanted to be a lawyer for the longest time before I got into government relations. And, you know, I think I realized that in the field that I'm in now, the cards weren't exactly right for me to go to law school and spend that money for that degree. But I think if I wasn't doing what I'm doing now, you know, I might actually seriously look into it, pursue law school to do something maybe a little bit similar, maybe working, you know, for a government agency or doing something completely different, real estate law, you know, medical malpractice, something like that. But the legal side of the work also kind of correlates to the government relations world, where we're always reading statutes and looking at codes and that kind of thing. So I think the lawyer route would be a good one for me if I wasn't a lobbyist.
And do you have any favorite book or hobby?
So as far as a favorite hobby, mine's probably going to be running. I'm a pretty avid runner. So I like to, you know, especially if it's been a long day at work or something, I like to go out and run a couple miles or a few miles, and that really helps to kind of get that steam off. So I've been running since middle school, so I've kind of kept up with that as a part of my life, you know, continuing on in my professional life. And a favorite book, I'm actually going to put this one towards the what we're talking about in government relations. There's a really good book that I would recommend anybody that's getting into the lobbying field to read. It's actually called Capital Punishment, and it's by Jack Abramoff. And if you know anything about lobbying, you know Jack Abramoff is probably one of the most crooked and corrupt names in lobbying in American history. He was a federal government lobbyist for a long time and did some things where he got in some major trouble with tax evasion and taking money away from his clients when he shouldn't have. But what he's doing these days, and the purpose of his book is to actually educate folks on what exactly happens in Washington, what exactly happens when you're working, you know, with Congress, and what exactly happens day to day when you're a lobbyist. And even though there's obviously some negative pieces of that, there's a lot of positive pieces to take away of what not to do and how to keep your nose clean. So I would think of anybody that's trying to get into the profession, if you can read Capital Punishment by Jack Abramoff, that's a really good book for this field.
Nice. And how, I mean, like, do you have any situations where you were so impressed with a fellow lobbyist and you wanted to emulate that?
Yeah, every single day, my boss. So my boss has been a longtime professional in this field for 20 years. And she's taken everything from, as far as issues, from healthcare to technology to hunting and sporting regulations to broadband to telehealth. I mean, she's dealt with a plethora of different issues as a contract lobbyist, but her background also spans working, you know, for a trade association and working for a major hospital system here in the state of South Carolina. So her background has been very broadening. And I think whenever I'm around her and I'm able to see her brain kind of working through, okay, we're working on this issue today with this client. Here's how we're going to navigate this. And she's able to almost pull, you know, five different scenarios together in her brain into one comprehensive strategy. And, you know, being so young and so new in the field, I don't have that same, you know, mindset just yet. So being able to kind of learn from her and absolutely wanting to emulate the way that she uses her brain for legislative strategy is super, super important for me. And it's super helpful for me too, to have somebody like that, that I can kind of look up to and kind of follow in her footsteps. So yeah, that's the person in the field that I can say I definitely would like to emulate.
What's her name? Sorry.
Her name's Lisa Sweatman.
Nice. So what is the one thing you want your family to remember about you?
In terms of this work or just in general?
In general, anything is fine. Work is fine or otherwise.
Yeah. I think in general, I think, you know, the thing that I would definitely want my family to kind of continue to keep it above mind is that, you know, even though, you know, being a lobbyist and kind of doing these things that I'm doing, you know, speaking engagements and that kind of thing is cool. And it's, you know, it's something that a guy from a small town in South Carolina, I guess, doesn't get to do that often. And I don't take it for granted, but I think I'd want my family, my friends to know that I'm kind of still the same person, even though I've kind of moved into this really cool role of somebody at 24. I think some of the best advice I've gotten from fellow lobbyists is, you know, you're doing these great things and you're working with these Fortune 500 companies as clients, but don't ever let it go to your head too quickly. Because once you do, people will recognize that. And that's when you're kind of on the out and out of having a big ego. So you still have a lot to learn. So I would just hope my family and friends and even my connections in the lobby would know that even though I've been given a lot of these great opportunities, that nothing has gone to my head and I don't take anything for granted, especially any of the advice they've given me. So
that's awesome. And what is the hardest part about your job?
I think the hardest part about my job sometimes is just trying to keep everything on track. Especially, and there's two different kinds of lobbyists. You know, there's the in-house people that have, you know, they work for a Fortune 500 company or they work for a trade association and they have that one interest and they may be tracking 20 different bills or 20 different issues, but they have the one client. You know, me and where I am, I'm a, you know, contract person. And so, I've got a multitude of different clients that we're working with. And, you know, I think sometimes the toughest thing about the job is to keep every project and every client on track. You have multiple clients that you're looking after. So you want to be able to say that you've worked with every single client, you know, at least once, you know, during the week, during the month, whatever, you're making sure you're taking care of that client because you don't ever want to go too long without them hearing from you and checking up and updating them as to what you're working on. And so I think just being able to manage all that, all those moving pieces, especially when you're running a bill or you're trying to block a bill or you're trying to, you know, to work an issue with a state agency. I just think you have to be cognizant that that's not the only client that you're working on and that you have others that you're also going to have to make sure that you advocate for.
And typically, can you just give us a quick overview as to how does your day during the session proceed and what does it involve?
Yeah, sure. So in South Carolina, we operate on a pretty much a 6-month legislative session. So the General Assembly will meet starting in January, and they normally will adjourn in May. This year is a little bit different because they have to do some things with the state budget that they have not taken up yet. So they're still actually in session as of right now. But typically a normal week during the legislative session, both chambers will come in at noon on Tuesday, and they'll usually adjourn Thursday afternoon. So they'll meet Tuesday. Wednesday they'll meet, and then Thursday they'll meet, and then they'll go home. Now that's just their work on the floor. So they're like I was saying earlier, a lot of the work on bills and different issues is done at the subcommittee level or at the committee level. So even though, you know, our week legislatively doesn't necessarily begin until 12 o'clock on Tuesdays, Mondays are spent, you know, prepping for the week, looking at what committee hearings are coming up, looking at the schedule, making sure we have coverage on everything, making sure we've got, you know, notes for clients. And if anybody's testifying, making sure we've got the client lined up to do that. And then, you know, Tuesday, we're usually at the State House monitoring session and what's going on the floor for debate. But then kind of what happens is after they adjourn, you go into subcommittee and committee hearings. So you may have on a typical Tuesday or Wednesday afternoon, 5 or 6 different committees with 5 or 6 different bills that you're tracking for 5 and 6 different clients. And so you just kind of have to plan it out to where, okay, this committee's meeting at 1 o'clock and then 1:30, this committee's meeting at 2 o'clock. So it gets very busy during the week because we're jumping from so many different issues and so many different committees to make sure that we're getting the most accurate and up-to-date information for our clients. And so that's kind of, you know, during the week. And then at the end of the week, we're usually wrapping up, trying to make sure that we've got everything for the week that we had set out to do that week as far as our goals and our projects done and checked off. And then also we're wrapping up with a weekly report. We put out a weekly report to all of our clients that kind of lists what happened that week, how things are affecting them, what's going on with their work. And so we're busy on Thursdays and Fridays trying to wrap up and get that report out to clients so they have it to read over the weekend and can come back with us for any questions for the following week. So that's kind of a typical week for us and what it looks like. I'm sure it's very similar across many other states too.
And a fun little question here. If you could have dinner with any 3 people, dead or alive, who would those be?
Dead or alive?
Dead or alive.
Dead or alive. I said dead or alive. That's a good question. I think one of those for me would have to be Ronald Reagan, just because I think he's probably my favorite president. I've read a lot of his books and I'm just super impressed with how he was able to govern and just the kind of person he was and the kind of leader he was. I think the other one would probably be, you know, it's another president, but it still is kind of in the same vein of, I just would love to be able to pick his brain as John F. Kennedy, just because he was kind of a young up and coming president during that time in the 60s. And I think that, I don't know how different our world would be today if he was still around, but he would just be somebody that would be very interested in sitting down and getting, you know, to, like I said, to have dinner with. And then the third one, let me see if I can pick somebody that's kind of not on a political realm. Growing up, one of my favorite people, I've read some of his books too. He's just a fun character, but I'm a University of South Carolina graduate, and so grew up as a Gamecock football fan, and Steve Spurrier was kind of my idol growing up as a kid. So he's head coach for the Gamecocks from 2005 to 2015, and so took us to places we'd never been before, and so I've never actually had the opportunity to meet him. And so if I was able to also sit down at dinner with him and pick his brain a little bit and just get to see a little bit of his funny quirks that he's got, that would be awesome.
Oh yeah, that's a good set of people to have dinner with. Well, let's look into your past a bit. So where did you go to college? You said University of South Carolina. Which degree was that in?
So I got a bachelor's in public relations from the University of South Carolina. And then I also have a master's in strategic communications.
Okay. So if you had to rewind a little bit more, where did you grow up and how was your childhood like, and were you interested in politics since childhood?
Yeah, great question. I grew up in Sumter, South Carolina. So my point earlier about being kind of a kid from a small town in South Carolina, it's a small town and in the middle part of the state, about 45 minutes from Columbia. And so I grew up in Sumter. My parents had no political affiliations at all. My mom's a nurse. My dad works for an industrial company. So neither of them were very politically involved at all. I, you know, kind of got into this, I guess, into the interest of government relations, I should say. I did work on a couple campaigns. And even though campaign work is not something I do today, and it's not something that I'm looking to do in my future, it was what kind of got me involved in meeting the right people and forming the right relationships to be able to make relationships to get into GR. And so worked on a couple campaigns, door knocking and putting up signs and just kind of being part of the day-to-day process in high school. And that kind of opened up the door to, oh, there's a larger world of government relations other than just political campaigns. You know, once these folks get into office, they're working with people like me and the many other lobbyists in South Carolina to get reliable information on issues, because we really serve as kind of education. You know, we're educators and informants to legislators, and that's what we hope that we can be. So that's kind of how I got into it back in high school, you know, with the interest in law and politics and working on campaigns, and it just kind of all went from there.
And do you suggest the same path for anyone who's probably keen to get into government relations? Do you think they should take the same path or a different route?
I think there's so many. I mean, that's the thing about this field is I don't think I necessarily would recommend one path. I think there's multiple ways to get into the field of government relations, especially in South Carolina. You know, you could end up working on staff at the House or the Senate, and there's a job that opens up for you to kind of come into the government relations world. You could be in Washington, D.C., working in Congress, and you want to kind of come back to the state that you grew up in, and there's an opportunity for you to do that. You could be working for one of the companies that maybe, you know, works with a firm, and that firm has an opening, and they know that you work with the company kind of on internally on the GR side, and that firm in South Carolina wants to hire you and bring you on board because you have that expertise in the area of that field that you're working in. But then there's also kind of the, you know, the non-traditional ways of getting into it. I mean, there's folks that, you know, started working, perhaps they're now a healthcare lobbyist, and they started working as a, you know, a medical sales rep for a company, and eventually just found their way into doing government relations. And so I don't think there's one way to get into it. I think there's a little bit of luck involved with it too. Right in place. I'm a full believer in right place and right time. So you kind of have to have a little bit on your side too, I think, to get any job, not just government relations, any job. But I think also, you know, another important piece of getting into this is to find somebody to kind of latch onto as a mentor in the field. And I've been lucky, you know, with my current boss, my, you know, some former bosses that have been very keen in this field, to be able to latch on to them and kind of learn what the ropes are in this field and what I can do to intertwine myself in it and get better at it every single day. So I think that would be my biggest recommendation for folks who are wanting to get into it, is find a mentor that you, you know, in the field that you can latch on to, that would be willing to show you the ropes and teach you how it's done.
And do you have any suggestions as to how they can go about finding a mentor?
Yeah, most of the time it's really, people are, you'd be surprised, people that are wiser and older and more experienced are most of the time looking for ways to get the information and the resources in their brain out to somebody that's younger than them. So I think a lot of my peers take that, you know, don't take that for granted as much as just reaching out. It can be a cold email. It can be a cold phone call. If you have somebody, you know, a mutual connection that can connect you to somebody, kind of do a soft introduction to say, hey, this is Campbell Mims. He's, you know, he's been, you know, working in these different fields, but he's interested in getting a GR and he wants to pick your brain and just sit down with you over coffee or lunch one day and figure out what he needs to do to kind of get in that world. And, you know, that would be my advice, is don't be afraid of a cold reach out, but don't be afraid to also use somebody that's mutually connected. You know, if you know somebody's connected to a lobbyist, you know, use them to set up a meeting, or like I said, set up that introduction to just get in front of them and then pick their brain, you know, ask them how they got there, ask them, you know, what their advice is for somebody young starting up, ask them who they need to be talking to in terms of sitting down with, not just that person, but ask them who else they have recommendations to talk to. And then, of course, I think the ultimate end goal is anybody that wants to get in the field, you need to have a little bit of experience. So I think if you're looking for experience, an internship is always the most valuable piece. I did a couple of internship opportunities in the field that kind of increased my knowledge and increased my want to be in the field. And so I think asking for those opportunities, not waiting for them to come at you, is going to be a super beneficial tactic for you to use in terms of getting into the field.
Nice. And so your first job after you graduated, was that in campaigns?
After I graduated from high school or college?
College.
College. My first job was actually working for a charter school authorizer here in South Carolina. So I was kind of a communications public affairs liaison manager for a charter school authorizer. So we had a portfolio of charter schools under us that we opened and authorized.
Okay. And that was nothing related to government relations.
Well, a little bit. I wasn't lobbying or anything like that in that job. I was mainly doing communications and public relations, but I would work on some government relations issues with a team of folks that we had in the office. So it was a good kind of, again, getting my feet wet, but I wasn't directly lobbying or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. And at what point did you step into the world of government relations?
So I guess you could say I've been in it, you know, for 3 or 4 years, kind of, you know, in that first full-time experience, and then in college and some internship opportunities. But I guess really stepping into this role, it's been about a year. So June of 2022 is actually when I stepped into this role with the current company that I'm with.
And this is completely into government relations.
Yes. Well, government relations and some association management work. So in addition to actually being a registered lobbyist for one of my clients, I also do run the two associations here in South Carolina. That's kind of part of that job. They're very similar, and there's a lot of legislative issues that overlap with running the day-to-day associations. So it kind of made sense for me to take on that job too.
And can you describe your most favorite issue you worked on?
I have to say, because it's been the issue that I've been so intertwined with, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we were able to, the craft brewing industry in South Carolina, that is my client. And so I actually represent the South Carolina Brewers Guild. And so we're a trade association that represents the state's 140 craft breweries. And so an issue that we just recently got passed and signed into law about a couple of weeks ago was able to provide breweries the opportunity to actually sell more of their beer that they brew on their sites out of their tap room to consumers like you and me who go into those tap rooms and want to take home beer back to, you know, the town they're from, or you know, maybe they're taking it out of state. And so we've actually passed a bill that was able to allow them to increase the amount of product they're able to sell out of their breweries while also being able to transfer product between their locations without having to go through a middleman to do that. And so that was an issue that I've been working for about a year now. It really started when I came on board in this role, and we just saw it through the finish line a couple of weeks ago. So that's probably been my favorite issue that I've worked on, just because I was able to see it from start, basically from nothing to a bill being passed. And so it was a super educational opportunity for me, but that's been my favorite issue I've worked on so far.
Speaking of your victories, how about your mistakes or learnings, as I would say? Anything which you can recollect which said, like, you know, oh, wow, I should have done something different?
Yeah, I mean, there was a time, I guess it's been back in April, where we were working on this same issue I just talked about with the Brewers Guild. And, you know, I actually had to get up and testify in front of a House subcommittee. And, you know, the night before, I had actually prepped, you know, kind of all my notes and everything, and got up there, and everything went great. Everything went fine. And we got everything out, as, you know, as we should have. But I actually forgot some very important pieces of information, you know, just because I was trying to get everything out and trying not to take up too much time. And so I actually forgot some important pieces of information I should have let the subcommittee know about, and didn't even say it. And nobody picked up on it except for me. So I guess a learning experience there is it's never going to be perfect, anything you're doing in the field of government relations. But just making sure that you're as prepared as you possibly can be. Nobody's ever going to be able to pick up on it. You know, nobody's going to think you're as unprepared as you do, unless you really show it. So you almost kind of have to have sometimes a little bit of a Teflon back and put on a little bit of a, you know, I know what I'm doing, even though sometimes you may not always know exactly what route you need to go down or what the strategy is. So,
if you had to describe one important skill, like every person who wants to get into this field should have, what would that skill be? Or can that be developed as well?
Yeah, I think there's a couple. I think the most important one that I've learned that I didn't even know was a skill that was needed until I got into it is probably public speaking. And not just public speaking of, you know, you're getting up in front of a crowd, but public speaking of you're meeting one-on-one with a legislator, or you're meeting one-on-one with a staff member, and you're having to concisely and, you know, succinctly tell your position to keep that person's attention while also getting your position across effectively and making sure they have all the information. And to do that, you really have to be able to communicate and convey an issue. So anytime I think that anybody in college is looking to get into this field is able to take a public speaking course to kind of, you know, get some practice with that, I would highly recommend it. The other piece I think that's important in this field is writing. And I think that sounds a little bit cliche, but it's really not. You're every single day, you're writing talking points, you're writing legislation, you're writing amendments. You have to know how to write, again, effectively, kind of succinctly to the point, get your point across while not making everything too long. And I think those are two skills that I would definitely recommend in this field to have a brush up on: public speaking and effective writing.
Nice. With that, we come to the last segment where you can take this time to talk anything about anything which you feel I should have asked you, or any advice you would like to share, or anything about your future. Where would you like to see yourself down the line? Or finally, anything about your organization, anything you'd like to promote, it's all up to you.
Yeah, great. I think, you know, I really want to harp on kind of the purpose of why I wanted to come and talk to you today is to make sure that young people, you know, they're in their 20s, know there's an opportunity for them to get into the field. And so I really want to harp on, you know, the fact that there are mentorship opportunities and opportunities to connect with people that have been in the field for a long time out there. You just have to go out and seek them and find them. And so at any point, you know, that I can be helpful to anybody that's looking to do that, you know, I'm open to doing that. But I think that people like me that are young are sometimes a little bit afraid to reach out to folks who have been doing a line of work longer than they have. And so I think one thing as we wrap up, I just would like to continue to reiterate that is that there's a lot of opportunity in this field, but you just have to not be afraid to go out and seek it. I think the other thing, you know, there's always, even to people I talk to that have no idea what I do, there seems to always be a little bit of a misconception as to what a lobbyist does or what it is. And I think sometimes the word lobbyist or the word government relations and government affairs, it kind of gets a somewhat of a negative connotation. And I really don't think that it needs to be. I think that, you know, we collectively, lobbyists are a group of people that serve to educate and serve to inform and serve to make sure that elected officials have the most up-to-date information available to them so that they can make decisions that ultimately will benefit the people that they serve. And so I think that that's another thing that I'd like to continue to convey is that we try to be subject matter experts on our industries, and we try to supply the most accurate, up-to-date information to elected officials to help them making their decisions that actually serve their constituents and are going to benefit people with jobs and workforce development and healthcare and whatever it may be. And so I think that's, I'd like to continue to reiterate that. I think that's kind of all the advice and I'd like to share kind of as we wrap up.
That's awesome, Campbell. Well, I just wanted to say thank you so much for being on the show. You definitely are an inspiration to the youth, and your pieces of advice and nuggets of information which you've given will definitely help people out. Thanks again for being on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.